All right, you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9:01. Coming up, host Linda Olsen Osterlund will speak with British author and filmmaker Andy Worthington about news from Guantanamo Bay Prison and the international protest movement against it, right after this.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Piña Flamenca, Eric and Encarnacion's Duo Flamenco, on Saturday, January 31st at 8 p.m. at Cafe Artichoke in Portland. Eric and Encarnacion's Duo Flamenco will present traditional and original compositions and dance numbers, including new, unreleased songs rooted in the deep tradition of flamenco. Again, that's Piña Flamenca, Eric and Encarnacion's Duo Flamenco, on Saturday, January 31st at 8 p.m. at Cafe Artichoke, 3130 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information about the event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Organicology Conference, February 5th through the 7th, at the Hilton Hotel in Portland. Organicology is an interactive educational conference designed to meet the diverse needs of the organic community. Organicology offers workshops, speakers, and intensives designed to advance knowledge for seed producers, farmers, retailers, educators, chefs, food policy activists, and eaters of great food. Again, that's Organicology, February 5th through the 7th at the Hilton Hotel, 921 Southwest 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is a song for Shaka Armour, last British man in Guantanamo. Stuck in a cell alone, though the US says it wants to let him go. And half the men still held are in the same sad situation. Prisoners are political games that ought to shame the nation. Shackles, shackles, they chain your body, but they cannot chain your mind. You tell truth to power, even though you are behind.
This is Linda Olsen Osterlund for Political Perspectives, and you have been listening to Stand with Shekar Amir by Andy Worthington, my guest today. Thank you all for tuning in. You are listening to Political Perspectives, and we're talking today about Guantanamo. Guantanamo has entered its 14th year, the 13th anniversary. I always think of anniversaries as positive, but of course they're not all that. The 13th anniversary was January 11th, and I have on the line for us Andy Worthington. He is the author of The Guantanamo Files. He's the co-director of the film Outside the Law. He is Outside the Law Stories from Guantanamo. He's also a founder of the Close Guantanamo website and the campaign called We Stand with Shaker Amir, who is the last British prisoner still locked in Guantanamo. Welcome to KBOO, Andy.
Hello, Linda. It's very nice to be talking to you again.
Yes.
Guantanamo's still open, but...
Yeah, exactly. It'd be nice to have it be... your music, by the way, is quite enjoyable and really great. I didn't know you had that talent in there along with your photography and everything else.
Well, thank you. I was very surprised to hear that at the start of the show. That's great that you were playing it. Thanks.
Yeah, and we'll get into talking about the whole campaign around Shaker Amir, but you were here for about 10 days, and it was because it is the beginning of the 14th year, and you were joining and being one of the main people in several of the protests that were going on about Guantanamo. So I'm wondering if you can bring us up to date first on Guantanamo right now. We've heard a lot of things, but maybe just start with the numbers. How many were actually released? What is going on in Guantanamo Bay right now and around it?
Okay, well, you know, several dozen prisoners have been released in the last few months, which is, significant progress given the fact that for around half of Barack Obama's 6 years in office, almost nobody was released at all. So, you know, that's very positive, and it shows a commitment, certainly on the part of parts of the administration to working towards fulfilling his long missed promise to close Guantanamo, which he promised when he took office in 2009 and promised to do it within a year.
And of these that were released in this last year, were they all among the people who had been cleared for release before?
Apart from the men who were sent to live in Qatar as part of a prisoner swap for Sergeant Bagdal, the sole U.S. prisoner of war.
That's right. I wanted to bring that up because it is so that they don't just that we still hold people who've been cleared for release for many years, but others have been used in negotiations.
There are 122 men still in Guantanamo, and of those men, 54 of them have been approved for release from the prison. The overwhelming majority of those by a high level task force that President Obama established in his first year in office. So they issued their final report 5 years ago, recommending whether people should be prosecuted or released, or in some cases continue to be held indefinitely without charge or trial. And so, 50 of the men that are still held were told 5 years ago that the U.S. had no interest in carrying on holding them. So that's obviously shocking. And the other four men who have been approved for release were approved in the last year by a new review process called the Periodic Review Boards, which was set up to review the cases of the majority of the men who haven't already been approved for release to see whether they still constitute, are regarded as constituting a threat.
And have they, in doing the reviews of some of those men, found them qualified for release?
They have, yeah. I mean, they reviewed 9 cases last year, and in 6 cases they recommended those men for release. Now, just 2 of them have actually been freed to date, but that's obviously progress. The other four haven't been because they're from Yemen and they just join a queue of Yemeni prisoners. The majority of the men approved for release are from Yemen. And the problem there has been that no one in the U.S. establishment has been willing to send prisoners back to Yemen because they regard it as such a dangerous place from a security perspective.
And I suspect that now that it's in much further disarray, not having any formal government in place, that will mean that the remaining Yemeni men have a very long wait to go home, or they will have to be sent somewhere else.
Well, they won't be going home. I mean, that's clear. The Obama administration has released Yemeni prisoners in the last few months to 3 different countries, and it's shown a willingness on the part of the administration to deal with the problem, given that they weren't prepared to send anyone home. So they're still not prepared. They weren't prepared even before the government collapsed. So they are actively looking across the world at a whatever country is potentially interested and able to take in some of these men.
So, Andy, it looks like as we're moving towards the end of the Obama administration, there's certainly been an acceleration. I mean, there was an incredible slowdown and no movement in his first period. But do you think that he's actually attempting to carry out his promise and get enough men released? I read one opinion was that he's attempting to get the population down low enough so there's no justification to keep open something as large and as Guantanamo Bay. What's your thinking when you're looking ahead? Because certainly I can't imagine a Republican president if that's the result. And I'm not even sure that a Democratic president wouldn't do the same thing that Obama did for many years, which is not, you know, keep it held the way it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to know. Certainly, I think, you know, on the face of it, the way the administration is behaving is that, yes, they are attempting to proceed with the release of all the prisoners approved for release, which I think is absolutely crucial. That would then leave them with, current estimates, that would leave them with 68 men. 58 of those men, and only 10 of them are facing trial. So the 58 others are men whose cases are, you know, slowly being reviewed by the periodic review process. And clearly, you know, what that's doing is establishing that, yes, after 13 years, a lot of these people against whom there were suspicions are turning out, you know, to be aging, not to actually be posing a threat to anybody. So more of those men are going to be added to the prisoners to be released, so that the Obama administration clearly will end up with dozens of people, and at which point they are presumably hoping that they will be able to move them to the U.S. mainland, to close the facility at Guantanamo, and then to deal with you know, who they've still got. And I would say that, you know, there are kind of two questions there. One, a sensible suggestion would be that doing so would enable the 10 men facing trials to actually be put on trial in federal courts rather than in the military commission system, which has been such a disaster at Guantanamo. I mean, really, an unmitigated disaster. It will then leave a number of prisoners that the administration says are too dangerous to release, but they don't have enough evidence to put the men on trial.
But they haven't been charged. So this would be a long-term violation of it. Yeah, it'd be a long-term violation of international law to hold men with no charge ongoingly.
Well,
they've been doing it.
And to do it on the U.S. mainland, Linda, is something that I think, you know, has absolutely no precedent at all. You know, the reason the Bush administration chose Guantanamo was because technically it's not U.S. soil. I would hope that if we reach that point, the legal challenges would be such that, you know, the pressure would be on to charge or release these men.
I would hope so, too. I think in the last, during the Obama administration, many of us have seen that things that we've hoped for aren't coming true, and that when they decide to change a law, whether it's constitutional or not, they go forward with the new definition of the law. And so my fear about the 10 men being tried in federal court is that they will basically allow something like tortured testimony in, or refuse to allow knowledge of torture to them to be brought to the jury, and begin to taint and degrade the actual justice system further in the way that they handle these cases. And the same with the way that they handle jailing the men. What precedent does that set ongoingly? But frankly, we have people who've been locked up and the key thrown away for a very long time in the United States, people who were political prisoners like Albert Woodstock, one of the Angola Three. So I'm not particularly hopeful, except that when we first began talking many years ago, you and I, about this issue, and you had written the book, The Guantanamo Files, really the definitive book telling the stories of how all of these men got there, the numbers are so much lower. I did have a moment today when I went, wow, that does feel good, you know, to have several hundred not be still locked up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it makes such a difference. And so I think there's no way we can say that ongoing protest and the work, the hard work of the attorneys at the Centers for Constitutional Rights, et cetera, and other attorneys is clearly having its day. There's been some revelations that have come out since I've talked to you. They're not completely revelations because we knew about them before, but one was in the form of the Senate Intelligence Committee's 6,700-page report on torture. And we knew torture was going on, but we certainly didn't know the details. And I'll be honest, I'm surprised how much got released, though I can't say I've attempted to read that 6,700. So that's one bit of news that's come out. There's also the book about murder at Camp Delta, which were the three suicides you and I have talked about before, and so those are now one of the sergeant who was on guard that night is saying that they had that the story that was told was wrong and that they had to have been murdered. So those two revelations have come out, and the torture report really had quite a bit of reverberation. How do you think they're going to impact the ongoing work at Guantanamo and to get the men from Guantanamo freed?
Well, you know, Linda, I was impressed that we finally got the summary of the torture report. I think the Senate Intelligence Committee and Senator Feinstein are to be congratulated for having undertaken it in the first place. You know, a lot of information's come out over the years, but this document contained, you know, shocking new revelations about, you know, things like anally raping prisoners with food. I mean, just horrible, horrible things. And the full explanation of, you know, how people from the former military contractors, the psychologists who had no actual experience of interrogation, were given pretty much complete control over the torture program, which then turned out to be a complete disaster in terms of producing intelligence, and also horrific from a kind of moral point of view.
Well, and you're talking about James Mitchell and Bruce Gent. Jessen.
Yeah, and I think that was laid out more clearly than anything we've seen before. But of course, you know, the only problem, having caused more outrage, I think, than anything I've seen since Abu Ghraib, is that, you know, we all then moved on. So no one's being held accountable. And, you know, you can't keep revealing evidence of crimes and then holding no one accountable. So I'm not sure where we're going to go.
Me either, especially given that two of the generals, I think Dunleavy and Miller, referred to Guantanamo Bay facility as a battle lab. Let me say that again, battle lab, laboratory, and that Jessen and Mitchell were engaged. They were paid $81 million basically to set up a human experimentation project on people that very soon, for many of them, they knew were not in any way dangerous, not even combatants. But they went forward with their torture and kept great detailed records and tried different things. This is experimentation. This is Nuremberg trials type of crimes. And I agree with you that it's a little shocking that we're all knowing that we paid $81 million of our taxpayer dollars that did not go into schools or food for the poor or housing for the homeless, but went into paying these two men to devise what they thought would be ever better, more effective methods of torture.
Absolutely. I think as well, Linda, you know, the fact that you also mentioned, you know, murder in Camp Delta. So the book by Staff Sergeant Joe Hickman, who was, you know, in charge of the people in the guard towers on the night that three men allegedly committed suicide, and has written a book. And I think, you know, it's another shocking thing about the lack of accountability, because Joe's story actually came to light 5 years ago in an article for Harper's Magazine by the attorney Scott Horton. It was an award-winning story. It clearly, I think, demonstrated that the official line that the men committed suicide simultaneously, stretched belief to beyond the borders of credibility. That it simply wasn't possible for these men to have done everything to themselves that they were supposed to have done, and rammed these dry rags down their throats.
While they were simultaneously hanging themselves and jumping off a box.
Right. And, you know, but again, you know, this story was shocking when it emerged 5 years ago. The Justice Department briefly looked into it and then turned away. Everybody moved on. So now we've had, you know, we've had a tiny flurry of activity over the book and the story coming back to life and a few more details that have been added over the years. But again, everybody moves on. You know, one of the things that I think is the responsibility to here is the media, that the media moves on like a giant traveling circus, can never stay on looking at any topic for more than a few days.
Unless it's, you know, some...
But again, you know, it adds to the pile of unaccountable issues, I think, that this story hasn't been reinvestigated properly.
Well, and it certainly, you know, I think it should be getting harder and harder for those who really want to cling to an image of an ideal America that our government does not feel a responsibility to live up to the same standards that they ask of others, but also that they claim to us, the populace, are being held. You know, this kind of activity is far beyond anything that I would have suspected could have been done, except in a few rogue, secret, covert places. I mean, I always knew that governments had those secret bad places where they do some things, but we always thought they were small. That we would pay $81 million to experiment on people that were on any people, period, is against United Nations, you know, it's against all of the UN laws about this kind of thing. My greatest hope would be that some of these people may get arrested when they're visiting overseas somewhere.
Because I think they won't be traveling overseas. I think that's been the case, actually, for a number of years now, is that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, you know, for many of them, their foreign jaunts have been severely curtailed, if not almost entirely brought to an end. But, you know, I mean, it's not really punishment, is it?
No. It might be also that you need a student movement around people doing psychology. You know, psychology students or someone to rise up against their own leadership that allowed this to be hidden in, you know, because American Psychological Association has not got clean hands in this.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and it must be said, actually, that while it's obvious, sadly, from history that when our actual, you know, leaders, like the president, the vice president, the Secretary of Defense, when they commit crimes, it's obviously very difficult to hold these people to account. But you know, Mitchell and Jessen, who were employed by the U.S. military, who, you know, clearly have spearheaded this disgusting and pointless program, have to, I think, be considered much more vulnerable than Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and all of their, you know, their cronies. And I would hope that there's an angle there that will be pursued and that people will carry on pursuing. Because, you know, if we understand from, say, the situation in Argentina, for example, that it takes decades for torturers to be held to account for the crimes that they committed. And it feels like that's where we are. But I think the big picture of this, Linda, that's worrying is that, you know, if the intention of the establishment is to sweep this under the carpet, to move on, it leaves torture as something that is somehow acceptable. And I regard it as a kind of virus that infects the society that tolerates it.
Well, I think it begins to tear apart at your moral fiber, and we certainly, you know, the same day that the torture report came out here in the United States, also on the same morning, quote, news shows, they were having actresses from a new show where the television show has a black woman president and then a white woman assistant who is the CIA head, and they have her actually saying more than once that she likes torture and behaves in torture. And they were having these women on the same TV shows where they had announced, you know, this report coming out, and they were talking with them about their wonderful relationship, and wasn't it a great thing in our culture that this relationship between these two women could be shown so well on TV, as if they were like real politicians? I think that the whole, I'm bringing that up because I think that all media, the whole construction of media, including all of the cultural programming, goes in to try to reinforce this view that it's somehow, you know, if that beautiful blonde thinks torture's okay and she's not going to let anybody get away with anything, and now this sniper movie,
I absolutely agree, Linda. I was over, you know, a few years ago when Zero Dark Thirty was brought out. You know, we now know that the woman who essentially, whatever the nuance is, was glorified in that film, had everything that's revealed about her, the story becomes deeper and darker and more horrible about this monstrous person, who was permanently crossing lines that had been set down, to justify things that shouldn't have been justifiable, but was a sadist, totally devoid of any practical knowledge about how to conduct matters related to intelligence, and yet she's the one glorified in that film. And as you say, over and over, the media produces not so subtle, really.
No, that's not particularly subtle to me.
How torture is essential,
Yeah. Well, I'd like to get to, you were here for about 10 days and you took part in some pretty interesting demonstrations. And also you were part of panels talking to students and other people around the area where you were at. And I was especially pleased, I have to say, that the protesters got onto Cheney's lawn. So tell us a little bit about the protest. We only have a few more minutes, but tell us a little bit about that, and please then focus in on Shaker Amir and encouraging people to support that campaign.
Well, yeah, we had. I mean, I was there when Code Pink and particularly spearheaded this invasion of Dick Cheney's lawn.
I love Code Pink for that kind of thing, don't you?
Oh well, it was so funny because the police had been blocking the wrong road, so
So they were made a fool of, and they
hated. Cheney hadn't locked his gate, so the next thing you knew, they were in his garden with their placard saying "A torturer lives here." It was very funny. We had the usual protest outside the White House, which was very powerful. I thought, actually, I think there's been an edge to the campaigning this year because of the whole Ferguson issue and the whole the whole movement that appears to be building up of opposition to the terrible. Impunity of the police for shooting dead black men on a horribly regular basis, and the rising indignation about the cruelties of the U.S. domestic prison system. So I think it's all tying in, really.
And then
I traveled to Massachusetts. I did a few dates in Massachusetts and one evening in Chicago, talking about the very things we've been talking about, really. How there has certainly been progress, but can we get to the finishing line for Guantanamo before Obama leaves office? And, it's an open question, that one, obviously, and it's worthy of further discussion in the months to come.
Well, Andy, I've been around since the late 60s and the anti-war movement and the women's movement and the, AIM and all of that. And I've come to realize that it isn't going to stop. It's always a process. They're going to grab ground from us and we're going to grab it back. And sometimes there are big worldwide, huge upsurges that turn everything over. But that doesn't mean that those that wish to oppress and use power to do it won't attempt to do that again in the future. So, I keep looking for, when's our job over? Our job isn't going to be over.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And when you move beyond these kind of national security counterterrorism issues into the economy as a whole, the social nature of society as a whole, I think, we're increasingly entering a darker and darker place.
I actually saw that you're part of it, or you were encouraging people to take part in a march about housing in London, and we're having a real struggle here in Portland around housing prices going up so high that those of us who have limited incomes are being pushed out of the inner city.
The same thing's happening everywhere, and it's yet another part of the power grab by the super rich at the expense of the poor. I mean, all we're seeing is a constant movement of money from the poorest people in society to the very richest people in society, and yet people are encouraged not to pay attention. They're supposed to be watching the reality shows and
or somehow believing that everything is fine when they don't have enough money at the end of the month to pay for their groceries.
No, absolutely, Linda. I mean, it's quite shocking, I think, the kind of place that we're in. And I think these are the reverberations from the crash in 2008, where the global criminals who caused that crash have now been rewarded by having free money printed up in eye-watering amounts and given to them to carry on the same things that they were doing before. And it's almost you know, it's almost impossible to get your head around quite the scale, I think, of the problem.
I do, too. And I want to thank you, Andy Worthington, for all of you out there. You can see his work. You can actually see wonderful photos that you've taken as well, and other articles that you've printed, and everything you'd want to know about Guantanamo on his website, andyworthington.co.uk. If you go to today's schedule on our website here at KBOO, you will see that I linked to him from just click on his name, and you can go to his website and learn more. We didn't get to talk more about Shaker Amir, and on your website there's a wonderful, a recent letter that he managed to get out, and he's got such a dry wit for being in this prison forever. So I do encourage you to support the campaign to free Shaker Amir, and thank you very much for joining us, Andy.
It's a pleasure as always, Linda. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And now I